This message comes from NPR sponsor Hulu. Don't miss the new docuseries, Black Twitter, A People's History. From memes to movements, see how this powerful online community shapes culture and society. Black Twitter, A People's History is now streaming on Hulu.
They say trust is the key to any relationship. On Prime Video's fun new spy show, Mr. and Mrs. Smith, John and Jane Smith are a married couple, sort of, who have either more trust or less trust between them than any couple you know.
It stars Donald Glover and Maya Erskine, and the show is part tense thriller and part romantic comedy. But it's also a character study of two people who have made their way into the spy life and aren't sure how they feel about being in it together. I'm Aisha Harris.
And I'm Linda Holmes. And today we're talking about Mr. and Mrs. Smith on Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Hulu. Don't miss the new docuseries, Black Twitter, A People's History, from Onyx Collective and Hulu. Directed by Prentice Penny, executive producer of Insecure, Black Twitter, A People's History, tells the story of how black voices found a new home online and blossomed into a force for change while laying down some hilarious tweets along the way. From the memes to the movements, see how this powerful community shapes culture, society, and politics. Black Twitter, A People's History, is now streaming on Hulu.
This message comes from Capital One, presenting sponsor of the 2024 Tiny Desk Contest. Nearly 7,000 unsigned artists entered the Tiny Desk Contest this year. The judges picked one winner to perform behind the Tiny Desk at NPR's headquarters. And now NPR Music is teaming up with NPR member stations to take the show across the country. Join the fun as the winner travels to 10 cities this summer, including Los Angeles, Brooklyn, and Chicago, for one-of-a-kind concerts with Tiny Desk Contest artists from each location. Visit tinydeskcontest.npr.org to meet the winner and buy tickets. Then check out the Capital One Venture X card. Earn unlimited 2X miles on everything you buy. Plus, get access to a $300 annual credit for bookings through Capital One Travel. What's in your wallet? Terms apply. Details at CapitalOne.com.
Support for NPR and the following message come from the American Cancer Society. Dr. Alpa Patel leads a team that researches cancer risk factors, and she shares how a new study aims to impact an underrepresented community.
My greatest hope for the Voices of Black Women study is that it will help us understand and identify culturally tailored ways to change and really eliminate the unacceptable disparities for future generations of Black women as it relates to cancer.
To learn more, go to voices.cancer.org.
Joining me and Aisha today is Ronald Young Jr. He is the host of the film and television review podcast, Leaving the Theater, and the podcast Wait For It. Welcome back, Ronald.
Hello, friends. How are y'all?
Hello. We are well and happy to have you. Mr. and Mrs. Smith was created by Donald Glover and Francesca Sloan, who was a writer for his show Atlanta, as well as for Fargo. He plays John Smith, and Maya Erskine, well known for the show Pen 15, plays Jane Smith. Those aren't their real names. Of course, the two are spies for a shady organization that assigns them to become a team, going undercover as a married couple. They get assignments, they go out, they get them done or don't. So the show is part episodic with an assignment of the week structure and part serialized as it follows their relationship from colleagues awkwardly forced together into something that's quite real. If this sounds familiar, it is very, very loosely based on the concept of the 2005 movie Mr. and Mrs. Smith, which is probably less famous as a film than as a chapter in the romance of stars Brad Pitt and Angelina Jolie. Those two won't show up here, but the collection of guest stars is very impressive. Nevertheless, it includes John Turturro, Parker Posey, Michaela Cole, Sarah Paulson, and Paul Dano, to name a few. All 8 episodes of Mr. and Mrs. Smith are streaming now on Prime Video, and we should note that Amazon supports NPR and pays to distribute some of our content. Ronald, I'm going to start with you. What'd you think of Mr. and Mrs. Smith?
Okay, so to get ready for this, I went back and watched the original movie with Brad Pitt and Angelina Jolie.
Until neither of us did that.
Didn't do my homework, I'm sorry.
Well, so I was excited because I always like to see if there's Easter eggs or anything like that when you watch the new thing of whatever they're remaking. And I remember watching it and saying, there's no way in the world that Donald Glover and Maya Erskine are going to match the chemistry of Brad Pitt and Angelina Jolie. And minutes into the show, I would realize that I was completely wrong. There's a scene where Donald Glover as John Smith meets Maya Erskine as Jane Smith, and they look at each other, and the way they looked at each other in that moment, I rewound that scene just to look at it again, because one, I've never seen Donald Glover do what he did with his face. He just did this very particular look on his face, and this is my first experience with Maya Erskine. So seeing that chemistry from that moment, I was in. And then as it kind of builds into this kind of more romance and romantic comedy, I would say more so that than an action drama or whatever other genre it's supposed to be, spy thriller. As it built more into that, I've found myself enjoying it more and more as it went. It does have issues. I want to talk about them, but none of those issues outweigh my enjoyment of the show and really hoping that they do another season.
Yeah. Aisha, how about you?
Well, Ronald, we need to get you watching Pen 15, which is, to me, one of the best shows of the last, like, 5 or 6 years.
I'm told, yeah.
But it is a very, very, very different very Maya Erskine.
But it's funny because, like, so I did not rewatch the movie Mr. and Mrs. Smith for this, but I do have vivid memories of when this movie came out. I really loved it. I saw it in theaters. And then I probably went to either Circuit City or Walmart and bought the DVD. And yes. So, like, I've seen it multiple times. I feel like I have a pretty clear remembrance of how things go down. And it's very different. They basically invert this plot. And I think that was to the show's benefit, is that, you know, in that movie, they are married and they have been married, but, like, they don't realize the other is working for some assassin and they're, like, competing assassin companies or whatever. Whereas here, yes. Like, they know going in and they have to try and, like, create a relationship out of it. And I think that's what makes this so fascinating and makes it work, because each episode hits, like, the various quote-unquote milestones that a lot of relationships might hit in any situation. But, of course, it's all heightened because they're assassins. I really liked it. And I agree, the chemistry is so strong here. Brad and Angelina Jolie, for all of the sort of, like, really kind of gross things we know about how the relationship has gone down in real life, like, they clearly had a lot of chemistry on screen. But Maya and Donald have, like, this kind of nerdy, sardonic, kind of darker chemistry that fits both of their personalities really well.
Are you jealous?
Me?
Yeah. You sound jealous.
No, I'm not jealous. It's just, it's weird to have my wife say the neighbor is hot.
But I'm not your wife, actually.
I really enjoyed it. I binged it over a couple of days. And I also had issues. I feel like, Ronald, we may have similar feelings. But overall, it's fun. And it's great to see a lot of, especially people like Parker Posey, anytime she's on screen, I'm like, oh, yes, this is going to be good. So it's great to see those, like, more famous faces, like, popping up as well.
Yeah, I loved this. I was such a sucker for this. I am excited to hear about the issues because I think I mostly probably missed them, which is not unheard of, you know, when I am having a good time. What I loved about this was, first of all, you know, as you say, their chemistry is sort of nerdy and different, but, like, it's also very stylish. There's a chase in this show where she's all in black and he's all in white. And they are such striking figures in that chase. He has a shawl-collared jacket at one point in this show that I was like, I gotta source that jacket if I ever meet anybody who would look good in it, because that is a spectacular jacket. You know, they move them from, you know, obviously you have to have a fancy party where they're very glamorous. Obviously you have to have them go to a snowy locale so they can wear, like, hot ski clothes. To me, it's luscious and it's very cool, by which I mean not neato kind of cool. And this is sort of what I said in my review that I wrote for NPR, is, like, it's cool, like Cary Grant if he ever sprinted.
Yeah.
Or, you know, like Pam Grier or somebody like that. It has, like, a super cool quality to me that I really, really reacted to. Even though the two examples I just gave are very different from each other, they both have this, like, cool quality, like a Steve McQueen Shaft thing.
You're
like,
making your point.
And I loved that about it, right? And I think that as I got into it, it works for me often as kind of a light sort of romantic comedy in certain places. There's a scene that I really love toward the beginning where he shows up in her room without a shirt on.
You lost your shirt.
I was warm downstairs. That's why I had no shirt. It's colder up here. The heat rises. You probably turn the air on.
I didn't.
But I was warm down. I was working. I'll talk to you tomorrow.
And the way that they navigate kind of her reaction to the fact that he doesn't have a shirt on and his reaction to her reaction, I think is really fun and funny. And it's good that it's kind of it's awkward. They don't immediately just like think it's perfectly a normal thing to do to be, you know, living fake married.
Yeah.
But it also worked for me as a character piece in a bunch of places. I found the exploration of kind of the power dynamic in the relationship pretty rewarding.
Yeah.
And then also, I really liked the adventures that they went on. So I was like, yep, check, check. I like all this. This is all working for me. These are like attractive people. Like Prime Video has this release about this show where they're like, well, what if like it was Mr. and Mrs. Smith, but like they were regular looking people? And I was like, they are.
Definitely not regular looking.
That's not true.
They may not be like astronomically gorgeous.
They're not Angelina,
like,
but like relax. Right.
Well, it's a different kind of attractive, but like it's not, you know, you did not pull out people and just be like, what if they just like looked like ordinary people you would see walking down the street? Like, especially the way that they are dressed and styled in this.
Yeah.
I had a wonderful time watching this. I thought it was so fun.
I agree with everything you said, Linda. Everything you said, like it being a good character story, it being cool, and them having chemistry are all what made it a very good romantic comedy. It also helps with the actual adventures that they go on, them being a pair together, them being kind of in a situation where they're unfamiliar. All of that makes sense. I have two main issues. Here's one of the main issues. One, I do not think they did any action training for this show whatsoever. Like, I did not believe them as gun handling people or as hand-to-hand combat people at all. And for me, it was only an issue when you would see them get into fights and you would see Donald Glover do something incredibly clumsy, or I'm like, he is getting beat up right now. And the same thing would happen with Maya Erskine. She would be holding a gun and I'd be like, I don't believe you whatsoever. I do not. If you're holding a gun from a distance and you're sniping somebody, maybe I'm like, okay, that makes sense. But if she was holding one and they were going around the corners and saying clear, all of that, I said they rehearsed this minutes before it happened. They did not go to, they weren't at like John Wick school training like with Keanu Reeves.
But isn't part of the point of at least Donald Glover's character is that like they're not necessarily great at what they do. Like, like right. They have some experience. Like, I think he's supposed to have had some training, but like, I don't think we're supposed to think they are these like perfect, because they also do stupid stuff.
Yeah.
Especially when you have the other Mr. and Mrs. Smith come in, the Parker Posey and Wagner Moura character. The whole time I was like, you guys don't find this suspicious that you just happen to bump into them at the farmer's market?
Yeah.
Like,
come on.
Well, and mine was, I made a note really early in my viewing that was like, are these people good spies? Because they get sent to watch somebody.
Yeah.
And they just turn and stare at her.
Over
and I was
and
like, this seems extremely obvious. They do this a couple different times. Yeah. Like they're in a restaurant watching this woman and they just turn, both of them. It's like you would be more subtle than this if you were just saying like, oh, there's a really good looking guy over there.
Yeah.
Like you would be like, okay, don't just like turn around and don't like swivel and stare. It was really interesting to me to think about how intentional that is or isn't. Because I agree with you. If it's not intentional, there are definitely times in this where you're like, I don't think they're good spies.
That's the thing. I'm like, we could think it was. And I understand, Aisha, your point saying like, if it was intentional, then I'm like, then I could reframe this whole series and watch it again. You know, the first Mr. and Mrs. Smith that we see on screen in this series early on, then you see other iterations of Mr. and Mrs. Smith throughout the series. One other one, as a matter of fact, they look like good spies. So it kind of makes me say, is this even more of a comedy than I expect to say that these people aren't even good at being spies? But I just don't think that was the case, because there's several scenes in which I'm like, okay, they know what they're doing. They have their wits about them, but they just don't move or look like they knew what they're doing.
I mean, I guess. The whole time I was thinking about this as like, this is The Americans, like the TV show The Americans, except like way less serious. And one of the things I like about this show is that we never really figure out who they're working for. Like, yes, they're texting, sending messages to whoever is sending them out on these missions, but like vaguely know it's American related, but they keep saying like, we think we're CIA, maybe not, I don't know. And I like that that's not the focus. The focus is their relationship. And the focus is, you know, whether or not they actually are compatible, whether they would actually find each other attractive, interesting, want to love each other outside of this entire dynamic where they have set up.
Yeah. The other thing that makes me lean in the direction of the interpretation that at least some of this is intentional is that there are definitely some moments where their relative competence relative to each other comes into question.
Yes.
And where their ability to succeed in the organization, there are some questions about it. And I think based on that, when you're talking about him doing certain things that seem kind of clumsy, it makes sense to me that it might have been intentional. But I want to know what your other big issue is.
Yes.
Okay. My other issue was that Jane was sometimes obviously written in a very specific Donald Glover-esque way that at times made me feel uncomfortable.
Interesting.
When I say that, I mean...
Tell me more. Yeah. Aisha's nodding.
Well, there's a way in which we know that Donald Glover has been publicly, you know, noted as having some sort of race-based issues when it comes to his relationships with Asian women and with Black women. Mm-hmm. It's been well-documented. We've talked about it even on this show at some points where it's been like, ooh, how do we feel about that?
Let's be clear here what those issues are. As someone who has followed his career since Community / Camp, the album,
yes,
an album I bought and listened to many times, that album is just riddled with Asian fetishism.
Yes.
And his comedy has been awash with that. Now, he's since kind of dialed that back, but then he also has had a very interesting kind of tense relationship with Black women, at least in the public sphere from what we've seen, whether it's the character of Van on Atlanta, which some people have criticized for not being really a fully realized character.
Yes.
And also that really terrible interview he did where he interviewed himself and addresses in scare quotes here, addressed how people feel about his relationship with Black women. And he just kind of very much like mocked it. So sorry, I just needed to interject and explain.
No, that was great. That was a fantastic explainer.
And I will say, I am not as much of a follower of his career as I think both of you are.
Yeah.
So it makes sense that this is more of a thing to you. Go ahead, Ronald.
Well, I think y'all both kind of nailed where I'm going. I kind of feel like if you go to ultimately Jane specifically and her relationship with John, it really did become about kind of his own relationship with women and his own relationship with how he thinks she should be treating him. You know, there's a point where he says that she's cold and she's robotic. I looked at this thinking, I don't know if he really learned any of the lessons or any of or responded to any of the critiques that people have when it comes to his interaction with women in shows like this. And I think towards the end, especially the second half of the series, there were times in which I felt like the writers thought that I shouldn't like Jane more than I actually did. Because I was sitting there and I'm like, no, this is John's fault. No, this is John's fault. Like, they're pretty much the second half.
And see, that's how I read it too. And it never occurred to me that I was not supposed to think that his insecurities were more at fault than anything she was doing. But I don't know whether I'm reading that the way that Donald Glover would. And of course, the complicating factor here is that they started the development of this series and he was collaborating with Phoebe Waller-Bridge.
Yes.
Who is, of course, you know, in her own right, a really well-established, very specific, idiosyncratic voice, right?
Yes.
And like, it's fascinating to me to think about what a collaboration between the two of them, had it been successful, would have looked like. And it is sometimes hard to look at this and not think like, this turned from something where, relatively speaking, you could think of them as equals, right?
Mm-hmm.
To where he collaborated with Francesca Sloan, who I am not putting her down. All I am saying is she's not as established as Donald Glover, and she's certainly not as established as Phoebe Waller-Bridge. Mm-hmm. So it kind of went from being something where he was kind of knocking heads with somebody who – and I say knocking heads because of Phoebe Waller-Bridge's description of it as kind of being differences in vision and stuff like that.
And referred to it kind of as a divorce, like a creative divorce.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
And this is what I think is so interesting is it's in the context of this premise – where it's about these two people who are kind of thrown together to do a job. And, you know, maybe they can work together, but that doesn't mean they're going to like each other. I just think it's fascinating to kind of chew on all the layers of how this got to be the show that it is, even though I, as I said, I really, really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
It is really interesting because I think we're seeing sort of a different side of Donald Glover, at least in the character he's playing here, because the way that their dynamic is set up is that Jane is the sort of hard-nosed, like, I'm just in this for the money and I don't talk to my father. I had a very difficult relationship with my family. Whereas he casts himself as like, I love my mama and like, I'm going to keep calling her even though I shouldn't be. Donald Glover's actual mother shows up to play his mother. But then also like he is the one who's kind of a romantic in a way. He's like very different from Earn, like doesn't have that sort of Dark Lord energy. And I think it's interesting because that is what they butt up against is like it especially shows up in the therapy episode where Sarah Paulson is playing their therapist, which is a very funny episode.
It's a good episode
but it does kind of show up there. And it also does mention that the tension between their race and how he sees Asian women, because he's on a mission. We see him on a mission with a bunch of black guys and they're all talking about different types of women. And it look, that conversation is a very real. I have heard that conversation.
Go to any barbershop.
Oh, my God. Yes.
I'm telling you.
It was a very barbershop conversation. So that was interesting to me. But like you said, Ronald, like it does seem as though like he's just kind of throwing this in here to say, like, I'm going to acknowledge this, but you're probably not going to be satisfied with the way I acknowledge this because I'm a provocateur. I like to get people going. It's like Atlanta all over again. Like, that's what he does, you know?
I want to be clear. I like Donald Glover's work.
Yes, same.
It challenges me in a way sometimes because I am now questioning Donald Glover's own thoughts in making his work. And I feel
Linda,
to your point, this would have been completely different if it was done with Phoebe Waller-Bridge. But when you take her out and you have Francesca Sloan, she is a frequent Glover collaborator.
Right.
So she knows what they want and she knows what they're going to do, especially. And what the Glovers love to do is not answer questions. They love to be ambiguous. They love to take you up to something and be like, psych, I wasn't even talking about that. Ha ha. They like to be right for the wrong reasons. You know what I mean? Like that's the kind of like their shtick. So I'm curious to know what this piece would have been with Phoebe Waller-Bridge, but I think only one of them could have been the lead on this. And if this had been her series, I think it also would have been good, but it would have been different.
Yeah,
exactly. And it's not necessarily invalid to know less context like I did.
Yeah.
It's just that it's also perfectly valid. This is the like separating the art from the history of the artist and all that stuff. Which is all kind of bogus because, like, there's nothing wrong with context as a way of thinking about art. And so as you bring this up, I'm like, okay, so all this context is a totally legit part of looking at this show and thinking about, you know, how it works.
And I think Donald Glover more than invites it. At this stage in his career, he knows that there are some people, like, of course, there are going to be plenty of people who, like, didn't really jump onto him until, you know, This Is America or Atlanta. But I think what I most appreciated about this show is that, like, for all of that, we do get to see sort of him indulge in this kind of Atlanta adjacent, but like really different from Atlanta in so many ways. Like I wanted to play a clip and this was a clip that reminded me a lot of Atlanta. It was kind of the peak moment for me where I was like, oh, this feels like an Atlanta moment. And it's the scene where they're in therapy and all of a sudden we get a reference to the very amazing and not forgotten, but not quite in the world, in the mainstream, as it were, R&B singer Maya.
Did ever happen to Maya?
That's exactly what we were talking about. We were saying, I think she married like Rich and then was like, I just don't need this and just decided to like be on her own. She was like, oh, I'm just gonna. But I just, we were like, oh, remember that song? Like,
forget. Yes, I do. I remember loving that video.
Oh, it's so good with Cisco. Yeah.
It just felt like it's like, okay, this is random. And I love those like those little bits of it, like pieces of Atlanta that him and Francesca Sloan like kind of dropped into this very different kind of story.
For sure.
I think one of my critiques of this, aside from all the valid things that Ronald has said, is just like the final episode, it feels long. It's just like one long fight or chase scene after another to a point where I felt like it was just like, okay, I get what we're trying to do here, but why aren't we going anywhere with this? Mm-hmm, and I think Donald Glover actually directed this final episode. So, like, I think he's just like, I want to be able to pull out all the stops. Yeah. It just felt a little long.
A little self-indulgent.
A little self-indulgent. But I think the way the show actually ends, to me, was satisfying. It was just
me too.
All that beforehand.
Yeah. I think there is a part of a lot of guys who have played parts where they are really charming and funny, where they also want to be like cool action.
I wrote this down, Linda. Anyone that's making this seamless crossover between sexy and funny is obviously Donald Glover. So I'm so glad you brought that up, because I was sitting there and I was like, oh, okay, I get it now. He's being funny. He's also being sexy. I have to buy both. I get it. It makes sense.
I love that. That's like the Will Smith playbook, right? Like, ooh, Will Smith connection. Running with his shirt billowing open in Bad Boys is basically Donald Glover in that scene you were referencing earlier, right? Where you saw his face for the first time and you're like, oh, this is, I've never seen this side of Donald Glover. Although we can't forget that Donald Glover did play Lando Calrissian.
Absolutely. And was very good in that.
No, I believe in him as smooth, sexy, and funny. I believe in him in both.
Oh, for sure. I mean, I think that we can all agree that it has some ups and downs, but we definitely all found it well worth a watch. We want to know what you think about Mr. and Mrs. Smith. Find us at facebook.com/PCHH. That brings us to the end of our show. Ronald Young Jr., Aisha Harris, this was a really fun one. Thank you for being here.
Yeah, so fun. Thank you.
We want to take a moment to thank our Pop Culture Happy Hour Plus subscribers. We appreciate you so much for showing your support of NPR. If you haven't signed up yet, you want to show your support, and you'd like to listen to this show without any sponsor breaks, head over to plus.npr.org/happyhour or visit the link in our show notes. This episode is produced by Cher Vincent and Skylar Swenson and edited by Mike Katzeff. Our supervising producer is Jessica Reedy, and Hello Come In provides our theme music. Thank you for listening to Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR. I'm Linda Holmes, and we'll see you all tomorrow.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Charles Schwab with their original podcast, Choiceology. Hosted by Katie Milkman, an award-winning behavioral scientist and author of the best-selling book, How to Change, Choiceology is a show about the psychology and economics behind people's decisions. Hear true stories from Nobel laureates, historians, authors, athletes, and more about why people do the things they do. Download the latest episode and subscribe at schwab.com/podcast or wherever you listen.
Support for NPR and the following message come from IXL Online. Is your child asking questions on their homework you don't feel equipped to answer? IXL Learning uses advanced algorithms to give the right help to each kid, no matter the age or personality. One subscription gets you everything. One site for all the kids in your home, pre-K to 12th grade. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And NPR listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXL.com/NPR.
All that sitting and swiping, your body is adapting to your technology. Learn how and what you can do about it.
I really felt like the cloud in my brain kind of dissipated. Once I started realizing what a difference these little bricks were making, there's no turning back for me.
Take NPR's Body Electric Challenge. Listen to the series wherever you get your podcasts.